So we're in James chapter 2, verse 14, the very famous and sometimes controversial section about faith and works. So we're skipping it, so we're going to move to chapter 3. 14 begins with a question. What use is it, my brethren, if someone says he has faith, but he has no works? And the second question, can that faith save him? Well, if we tried to answer that question at that point, we would really struggle because we would, for most of us, would bring in all of our Pauline theology and his approach to this and read read into this something a little different than what it actually says. Because he's really not saying, what use is it, my brethren, if someone says he has salvation that is a result of works? Now, he does kind of indicate that in one sense on that last second question when he says, can that faith save him? But it's that faith. What faith? A faith that has no works. Not a works for salvation, but a faith that has no works. And one of the things that we'll have to decide as we go through this is the use of James, or in James' usage, especially in this section right here, when he talks about faith and works, is he speaking, would his definition of faith and works be the same as Paul's? And that is, and in this section, is that even the definition that James would use elsewhere of faith and works? He moves from there and gives an illustration in verse 15 and 16, 17. He says, if a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed, and be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead, being by itself. So his illustration is one of, okay, and it's using brother or sister, so it would appear not that it would necessarily matter, I don't think, to his point, but he's making it even more so that, you know, another believer within the church. Someone is saying, I have nothing to eat. My family's in need. You're aware of this need, and you piously say, well, God take care of you. And then his question is that faith a faith that's, you'd call alive, or is it dead? Well, actually, he doesn't ask the question. He states it's a dead faith. What use is a faith, or what, if you relate it to that in that illustration, it's not pragmatic. It produces nothing. There's nothing that comes from that kind of a faith. Then verses 18 and 19, he gives a logical illustration. But someone may well say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without the works, and I will show you my faith by the works. So there's an interesting one in many ways, regardless of how you define faith. I have faith. You have works. I'm going to show you my faith without works, and you're going to show me your faith by works. Who's going to win? When you think about it, how would you show your faith without any works? Well, that's what we got to do here. And the same thing with faith. How is he using it? But we can start to see, his terminology, it's never in that sense there. And so we'll kind of see it as we move to the next session, because he gets into biblical arguments. Well, verse 19 is still a part of the logical argument. He says, you believe that God is one, you do well. the demons also believe and shudder. So you have faith that God is one, that God is, you know, like the Old Testament, the idea that there's one God. You know, we don't believe in a plurality of gods. And so that's good. But the demons believe it also. Is there any intrinsic absolute value in believing that God is one? That intellectual acknowledgement. Well, the demons believe it. So that by itself isn't any overwhelming thing. Then he moves into some biblical arguments. He says, "But are you willing to recognize, you foolish fellow, that faith without works is useless? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac his son on the altar?" So now we get into another term that confuses us. Was not Abraham our father justified by works? Now that one starts to sound, okay, this is definitely contrary to Paul. Because here he's saying that he was justified by works. And it's when he offered up Isaac on the altar. But prior to that, what was it, like 30 years before that, you know, he's going to cite this verse in a minute, that, and that's the one Paul uses when talking about faith and works. It says that Abraham was justified when he believed God. When, you know, he count the stars, you know, it's in that belief in God. So he moves on. He says, you see that faith, verse 22, was working with his works. And as a result of the works, faith was perfected. But then he says, and the scripture was fulfilled, which says, and Abraham believed God and was reckoned to him as righteousness. Now we're all of a sudden we're going, wait a minute. Now it says scripture was fulfilled and this occurred earlier. And he was called the friend of God. You see that a man is justified by works and not by faith alone. In the same way, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? For just as the body without the spirit is dead, so also faith without works is dead. So we have three terms here that are really important. The idea of faith, works, and justification. There's one area that we can be sure of when you use faith and belief, using those as synonyms here, when he talks in verse 19 about you believe that God is one, you do well, but the demons also believe in each other, we start to see faith in that context. It's not this personalized faith, but it's more of an intellectual belief. The faith, the idea of faith is a, you know, if you would, an orthodox faith. I believe the things that are right. You know, I believe that God is one. I believe that, whatever your doctrinal statement is. But it's in that belief of intellectual assent. Not necessarily as Paul's using it, in that personal trust. The other one is works. Notice the works here always is in that context, or almost always is in the context of following faith. And also the works here have no reference to the law. It's not an obedience to the law, a fulfillment of the law. But here it is in the sense of, you might even describe it as love. Works are a... what would you say, a tangible aspect of love, a tangible demonstration of love. And that's the illustration. It begins at the beginning. It's, you know, you have someone in need and you are pious and say, hope the Lord watches out for you. Well, you know, but his is, if you had faith, then you would have works. So So the works are really at that point is a is a concrete way of showing love. So the works are not about law, not to fulfill the law, not to earn something, but the works become a demonstration, not only of faith, but a demonstration of love. And then the word justified, when we think of it from the Reformation, as we understand Paul and what Martin Luther, became the foundation for the Reformation, when Martin Luther came to understand that justification meant a forensic, a legal term of declaring one to be righteous. You are justified. God declares that we are righteous. But we also use justification in a different term. He was justified when he did that. This happened to somebody and he was justified when he did that. We don't mean that he was declared righteous. We mean that it was, he had reason to do it. It was fair that he did it. It was valid, or even that it validates it. And we talk about, justifying ourselves. We put it in a way that makes it valid. So if you read justification more, not in the forensic sense, but in the sense of a validation, which is a legitimate use of the term, then it changes it all too. So let's go back and read these things with those kind of mindsets. So what use is it, my brethren, if someone says, if someone says he has faith, what do we mean here? Not saying he has a personal relationship, but he says he has faith. I believe your doctrinal statement. I believe there's God. But he has no works. He has no demonstration that would flow from a genuine acknowledgement that God is God. And kind of like Christ when he was asked about the greatest commandment, to love God and love people. So if you really acknowledge there's a God, then the next one would you relate to people. So can that faith not save him in the sense of soteriological salvation necessarily, but even could be in the sense of deliverance. But nevertheless, however you read it, can that kind of a faith deliver him? No. Because it's an empty faith. It's a dead faith. It's a faith, it's an acknowledgement of truth, which all of us have to acknowledge that God exists, that Christ died for our sins, but personal faith does more than acknowledge it. It embraces it. And so there's not an embrace in it here. There's just the acknowledgement of it, an orthodoxy. If a brother or sister, the illustration is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to him, go in peace and be warmed and be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary, what use is it? Well, there's no use. You haven't done, you've said it in a way that sounds like I care, but you really don't care. You're not caring for that person at all. Now, I think we have to be a little careful here when we're making this illustration, because we are surrounded by people at times that say they have needs, and we may not necessarily do anything to meet that need, because we have lots of questions of whether that need is legitimate. Yes. Okay, but the very response here isn't one of, I don't have the resources to meet your need, or I'm not convinced you really have a need. There's a piousness here. Go in peace, be warmed, and be filled. It'll take care of it. Don't worry, smile. It's just a... Don't turn that thermostat up. Just be warm, huh? Yeah. And Wynn would be able to testify. What use is that?
In Dakota.
So even so, faith, that is a belief, if it has no works, it's dead, because it's just a belief. It's just that piousness. But someone may well say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without the works, and I will show you my faith by my works. And regardless of how you define faith, that one holds true. Now, not necessarily the works of keeping the law, but nevertheless, I mean, there's no way to demonstrate your faith. And I think here it's not personal faith. I think it really is this other sense of a more of an intellectual assent. But regardless, even if you're talking about personal faith, there's no way you can demonstrate your faith by sheer profession. Now, should we accept people's profession at face value? I think so. They shouldn't have to prove to me. I mean, they don't need to prove to me they're a Christian. But their profession doesn't demonstrate anything. Now, could people show me works and I can make a, they not have faith? Sure. But that's not his argument here, though. It's not about salvation per se. It's about a faith. There's an argument going on behind the scenes here that Paul is, or that James is addressing, and I think it's this very thing that people are saying, I have an orthodox faith. And he's saying, that kind of faith has no value. That faith that believes all the right things, but doesn't trust, that doesn't embrace, that isn't sold out to it in that regard, it has no value. You believe that God is one, you do well. I mean, that's a good thing to believe truth about God. But the demons also believe, and they shudder. But it doesn't change their relationship with Him. But are you willing to recognize, you foolish fellow, that faith without works is useless? Now, this is the part we have to be careful of. He's not saying that a relationship with God that's established by works is useless, or a relationship with God that is established by faith is useless. He's not talking about that. He says a faith, an acknowledgement that this, a faith without works is useless. I think you could even, I would have no problem with even saying a personal faith. I don't think that's what James is saying here. But even as we would call it, a personal trust in Christ without works is useless, because I don't think the two can exist. I mean, they have to coexist. They cannot, they cannot be independent. You cannot have true faith and not have works. Now, that's where you get into lordship salvation. But the issue becomes, and where I would say I don't believe in lordship salvation, is I don't have to be the judge that you have works. I think there has to be a change in our life, or not, there has to be, I should put it this way, if you have personal faith, there will be a change in your life. Now, does that change have to be such that I see it, I recognize it? No, I don't think so. I cannot be the judge of whether you're a believer, because I say, I didn't see the works that I should see. One is I don't see everything. The other one is there's a time frame, but I think there is that. But I don't think that's what he's talking about. Here he's saying this orthodox beliefs that doesn't produce love, if you would, is not, that tells you it's not genuine. But orthodox belief wasn't ever the goal. I think that would be a description, and I think you'd have to wonder when Paul is writing, is there that aspect that's in here? Now, I don't know if I'd really describe the Pharisees that way in one sense, because I think there was a lot of, real manipulation going on. But yet it wasn't that, to some degree it was, theirs, though, was working. See, we keep the law. Now, they had to bend a lot of rules and reinterpret a lot of things, but theirs was, we keep the law, and so we're justified. And that's not really that's more what Paul was addressing, that's not what James is addressing. James is more maybe even a reaction to that, saying we believe the right things, therefore we have a relationship with God. And James, that I think that's what he's saying. No, believing the right things is not what it's about. The demons believe the right things, in that sense. in the sense of intellectual understanding or faith.
In the statement, he says, "I was not living up to my beliefs." So, you know, I think James would say,
"Yeah." Yeah, there's a way of. Yeah, there's a way of saying that. Yep. Yep. And we all would say something like that, but really the issue, what we say is, I'm not living up to the values I espouse, or the values that I have stated, or the values that I set as my goals. Unfortunately, what we do that actually are, those are our values, and that was not very comfortable. As we're close to the personal confession, you're getting, Belinda. It's a private matter. It's not public. It's between me and my wife, me and my family. You know, and I understand to a certain degree what he's saying with those statements, and everybody can empathize in that certain regard. And the media coming at you, but when I was listening this afternoon, I thought, that is so stupid. If you're not public, if you think you're entitled to privacy, then quit taking the endorsements from Buick, quit all the Nike endorsements. Maybe you can play golf, in that regard, but anytime you do any of those endorsements, and then I was like, I'm a pastor of a very small church, I'm a school teacher, and, I'm not saying I live up to any of those standards I should, but to think that I have a private life, not public, and I'm a little peon, and I have a public life. I mean, very few people have, quote, a private life. I mean, to a certain degree you can, but anytime you get anything connected with the public, so that really is, I understand, see, that's the justification. I understand him saying that. For justification purposes, they leave me alone, trying to justify it. And so whoever wrote that was very well gifted in writing. He most likely did not write it. Well, when you have that kind of money, you pay lots of people to do those things. But you don't have, if you're going to take that money to say, here, buy a Buick because I'm Tiger Woods, yeah. Then hey. No.
Why should he be worldwide publicity?
Because he is worldwide publicity. Now, what the ones
I...
No, well, but see, it's not really because of endorsements. I mean, where do you know Tiger Woods from? Do you really know him from golf? To a certain degree. But why do you know him so much from golf? Because all the Gatorade commercials, all the Nike commercials, all the Buick commercials, his own golf tournament. I mean, that's putting somebody out there in front of you all the time. And so that's why I'm saying that really makes him very public, as opposed to if he just had a profession of golf.
Okay, he has admitted all that. It's public. It should end.
No, but his deal was, my private life should be private. I'm just saying, if you are in the public in that way, you don't have a private life, and he knows that when he takes those endorsements. So that's a bad argument, I'm saying. Just like me, I don't have, nobody cares, but I don't have a private life as a teacher. But now, if the question is, should the world really care what's going on with Tiger Woods? No, I don't think so. In the sense of, we're into the celebrity worship as a society, which is so crazy. But it's where they are, where we are, whatever. And I look at so much of this stuff and I go, why is this a story? I don't understand it. And then my wife tells me that's actually what people at work talk about. I have a hard time believing it, but anyway. So where were we at this point? So he said, but are you willing to recognize, you foolish fellow, that faith without works is useless? Now, it's not a faith that, it's not saying a salvation or works are useless because they bring faith, but he's talking about a faith that doesn't produce works. And I think that becomes this orthodoxy. It's only orthodoxy, or it's only a faith, but it doesn't have any pragmatic results to it. Is it really a genuine faith, is what he's saying. Well, I think that's what he is. That's where he'd come to. He's saying it's useless, or it's dead, it's void. So he basically is saying the same thing. You really can't even call it faith. And then he says, and now this is the one that kind of gets hard right here for a moment. He says, was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac his son? Well, if justified means he was declared righteous, then we have problems here. But if we see it as, wasn't he validated? Wasn't his faith validated by that act? I mean, biblically, even in that text, it basically says that he proved his love to God. He proved that he loved God by doing that. So his faith was validated by that act. And I think that's how justification is here. So he validated the fact that he did trust God, that he did have faith in God, that he did think God was God by the very act that he had there. But then notice, it also goes on, and the scripture was fulfilled, which says, and Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Now that's where Paul would say salvation was. When he believed God, it was reckoned to him as righteousness. He was saved at that moment. And what James is saying is the reality of that salvation was fulfilled later when he demonstrated concretely that. Not that later was the salvation, but the salvation was here. Now we can see the concrete aspect of that salvation because he lived it out. And he said, I trust God so much. I believe, I don't just have an orthodox faith here, but my belief in God is demonstrated by I step out here and I'm willing to sacrifice. Well, no, that was actually, granted it is, but in the process, and I'm not sure how you make those distinctions, because I would agree with you. I mean, there's that sense that he believed God and went, but we're told in Scripture it's at that moment that he believed God and he was reckoned, which is after that. So, I wouldn't be able to make that distinction for you and say why. Was there nothing else? Yeah, there had to be something else, but that's when those are the points in the text that point us to it. I mean, because it's that, way in between was his, I'm not so sure God's going to provide the way that I thought God was going to provide, and so he comes up with Ishmael. But then at this point, though, it's, in the text, and it's the first use of love in the Bible, in that passage, and when God says, your son, your only son, the son whom you love, and he says, yes, I, and even in that passage, he believes Isaac is still going to live. Now, what he thought was going to occur, I don't know. I mean, there's an implication of resurrection. I don't know what he thought, but I don't know that it explains to us what he thought would occur, but he thought something's occurred, and what it definitely doesn't explain to us is what Isaac was thinking. And that one is just beyond my ability to comprehend, What? And so then in verse 24 he says, you see that a man is justified by works. That is, he's validated by works and not by faith alone. So my faith, my acknowledgement that there's a Trinity, that doesn't validate anything, but when I live out something based upon that, then that becomes some validity. In the same way, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? And so here we have an action by Rahab, and there's nowhere, to my knowledge, right there in that passage that it says Rahab believed anything. But her very actions show that she had a confidence in the God of Israel. And so her actions demonstrate that indeed she had that. And for just as the body without the spirit is dead, so also faith without works is dead. But he's not saying so also is, works leads to faith. He's saying, you have faith and it should produce works. And that's the opposite of what Paul's saying. Paul's deal is that people are saying, I have these works of the law that gives me not necessarily faith, but that gives me salvation. James isn't saying that. James is saying you have faith. The faith must produce works, or it's not a genuine faith. But they're two different kind of works. James is talking about a works that is a demonstration of the faith. It is an outgrowth of love, where Paul is talking about a faith, a works that is keeping the law. And so they're different things. So tried to take up all the time so there would be no questions, because I can't answer any questions on this.
Robin demonstrated the test about that the last 2 weeks. He got kept up to class every week.
If I can summarize.
No, great. We'll always do summarizations. Well, that's obvious you can't, because you've set a paragraph just to try to get introduced to it. So
that's how I roll. when Paul is talking about faith and justification and works, he's using theological terms, whereas James here is using common speak and common talk.
Yeah, that would probably be valid.
And, he says, if you say you have faith, but you do this, what you what you say you believe is what you demonstrate your belief to be. You can say you believe all the things in the world or all the stuff, but what you do, and this is so publicly seen, just across the board, what you do is really demonstrating where your faith is. There's a lot of discussion that sin is basically atheistic thinking. Starting with atheistic thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what you said is exactly right. I think where we get in trouble on a passage like this, if we understand it the way Rob just said it, which I think is very valid, where we get in trouble is then when I say, but look at Joe, look what he did. Therefore, he's not a believer. Because I looked at his works. His works aren't consistent with his beliefs. Therefore, he really doesn't believe. And that is not what James is saying. It's not this sense of judgment to give me a basis of judging others, but it's more in this. But it's in this other part where somebody is making the argument that all I need to do is believe. It's not similar. I don't want to say they're similar. It's a totally different philosophical position. But in Corinthians, Paul addresses those that say, and the argument was at the time is that as Christians we're spiritual. And it's that spiritual entity that we have that's in relationship with God. Not materially. The material part of us is of the earth. It's the spiritual aspect of us that is heavenly, if you would. So what I do physically doesn't matter. And, so there's that dualism of separating it. So it's addressing two different things. Well, in another ballpark, totally, that's kind of what James is addressing, is somebody saying, well, I believe the right things, and that's all that's necessary. So if we took it and went the other way and said, your work there wasn't good, therefore you're not a believer, that's not what James is saying at all. He's saying to the person that's saying, hey, I believe, and that's all that's necessary. Kind of like the, in one sense, illustration, like, with Paul, they're saying, hey, we're spiritual. It doesn't matter what we do here. Well, no, it does matter because, you know, he goes on and says, you know, you're joined. But.
It's,
right.
But it's always faith. It's either dead faith or living faith. Yeah. It's not no faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lack of faith. It's the status of that faith.
Yeah. Yeah, because these are people that claim they have faith. But their faith is, as James would say, is a dead faith. It's not alive. It's not a valid faith in that regard because it has no works. It's just orthodox belief. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's not about, I don't think it's about salvation. It's not about that. But yes, it's about, you know, and that's the part that we were talking about recently that is difficult with the Bible, and it doesn't, you know, it'd be nice if we had this little extra little section there that said this is who they were writing to, this is why they were writing all those things, and it's what people do sometimes when they start to teach a book, but they're taking it from the book and trying to figure it out, which I mean is a good thing to do, but we don't have it authoritatively. So here we are, we're trying to look at what James is saying, well, the only thing that really makes sense here is that there was somebody that's making this argument, and that's why he's addressing it, because we look at the argument and go, that's what he's saying, so there must have been somebody there doing that. No, I would say he's saying, because I don't think it's about, I think that's the whole point here. It's not a personal faith. It's just like he's talking about, those demons believe, but it doesn't make a difference. It's not personal. It's orthodox belief. And if you have orthodox belief that doesn't have works. I mean, if you have orthodox belief that has works, then it's not simply orthodox belief, it's a trust. It's genuine. But if you just have an orthodox belief, there is no real faith there. So in James's terminology, those that have faith but no works have no faith. But it's not saying they had a person, they were saved and they lost their salvation because they didn't have works. It never existed. Right. But see, they're using belief and faith there in that context in an evangelical sense of saying, I trusted Christ, even though maybe they're not fully saying that, but I trusted Christ, and then that trust gives me salvation. That's how they're using it in that context. Now, whether or not they did that, that's a different issue. But that's how they're using it. And that's what. But if you have somebody, well, now the one might be, I have a friend, I remember a friend saying that, you know, he grew up in a Presbyterian church, and he, you know, had always heard, you know, I mean, Christ died for sins, but it was that sense of Christ died for my sins that he never heard. Not saying it was never said, but that's, he never, you know, heard that, never processed that. So see, there's an orthodox belief. Christ died for sins. Is that true or false? It's true. But that doesn't save you. So that's an orthodox belief, but it doesn't, that, you know, it's got to make that personal application. Christ died for sins. Hey, I'm included in that. Therefore, I could, you know, whether or not you actually say it, it's not important. But you could say it as Christ died for my sins. And, you're right. Yeah. But even if you said people are sinners and Christ died for sins, see, that's still an orthodox statement, but it's not personalized. And when you're talking about personal faith, it has to get personalized. So I have something that's true. Personalized means okay, I am one of those sinners, and his death applies to me as a sinner. Now, I'm not saying everybody that believes has to process that. I'm sorry? It's impossible. In James's argument. Now, you know, the other one here is, are there people that have, quote, orthodox belief and have works that you could look at and say, oh, they have great works. Yeah. And that's what makes all this, you know, fun. That's why we don't want to be sitting in the role of judge. I mean, Robin had a boss in Dallas. Based upon what I know of him and everything, I have no reason to think he's a believer. I do think he went to church, maybe in Catholic church, can't remember, you know, occasionally and stuff like that. But he was extremely kind to Robin and to us and did things for us. I mean, when Megan was born, he and an associate or another, you know, assistant pharmacist, whatever, he was the head of the pharmacy department at the hospital. They came and got Robin, and you got to appreciate this. You know, at the time period, there was like one store in town that was using barcodes, but they knew Robin well enough, and they wouldn't take her to, you know, whatever it was, like Kroger, that had everything still had the little price tags on it. They took her to one of these stores that where there are no prices. It's barcodes, you know, which was a new thing, because she's not going to buy anything. It costs money. And then she's kind of being real careful. And I said, you either buy stuff or we're going to start throwing it in there and you're going to get what we want, you know. I mean, that is just really generous, you know. I mean, but that's not necessarily, yeah. I mean, and that's not James's argument. James isn't trying to say here, and see, I think that's where we have to be careful. You know, if you notice what James isn't saying is that, if you see anybody that has, you know, that's kind to somebody, that's a demonstration that he has faith in that person. You know, that person has faith. No, that's not it either. Ryrie has an illustration, and it's kind of dated, and so it's a little difficult. And I don't know that it has ever really worked for me because it's so dated. But he talks about a coupon that has two parts to it. Now, I mean, you could have this as like if you go to a movie and, you know, they take the stuff and they give you one and they keep one. Well, the idea here is that you've got this coupon, but only one of those is good for admittance. You know, you got these two parts. And so it's the one that's good for admittance, but if that's broken, you can't get in. And so the part you keep doesn't get you in. It's the other part that's necessary, but they have to be together for it to be valid. And he says, you know, that's faith and works. The works have to be connected to the faith, but it's the faith that admits you. And like I said, I understand the illustration, but that's going back to a coupon that's like with buses and trains. I think trains and stuff. I never rode a train in my life, and they probably don't use those kind of coupons anymore anyway. And so yes. In here, it's, yeah, it follows it, yeah. And that's the thing, James, is it follows it, yeah. So, you know, but, you know, as far as illustration, but I think we have to be careful, as anything in the Bible, is when we take something and we kind of say, oh, well, then, therefore, we switch it, that's where we get in trouble. See, I think that's what lordship salvation is you're here, like I can say, I have no problem, you know, I mean, personally, I have no problem. I think you can show it biblically that. You know, just logically, if nothing else, is that if you're saved, there's a change in your life. And then I go, oh, therefore, if I can't see a change, you're not saved. Well, no, that's not it. And I think that's here. We can't look and say, if I see a work that's contrary to belief, therefore you don't have belief, or any of those kinds of things. So, but yeah, I think there are people that, you know, I mean, there are definitely people that grow up in homes that start speaking the terminology, you know, they know the terminology because they grew up in it, but they don't have personal faith. And I think that kind of falls into this sense of orthodoxy. Or you have kind of like I was growing up, it wasn't really, I don't even know if I'd ever described it faith, but grew up in church, and so there's a certain orthodoxy in the sense of, if you said, do you believe God? Yeah, I believe God exists. Do you, you know, you kind of have those vague things, but there's no personalization.
Yeah.